The first reading is from Deuteronomy chapter 30, verses 11 to 20. Now, what I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. It is not up in heaven, so that you have to ask, who will ascend into heaven to get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it? Nor is it beyond the sea, so that you have to ask, who will cross the sea to get it and proclaim it so we may obey it? No, the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commands, decrees, and laws. When you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land you are entering to possess. But if your heart turns away, and you are not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land you are crossing the Jordan to enter and possess. This day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God, listen to his voice, and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
The second reading, James chapter 3, verses 1 to 12. Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses and make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal, or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder, whatever the pilot wants it to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil amongst the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures of the sea are tamed and have been tamed by man. But no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With the tongue, we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water.
This is the first time I've ever done this. I'm not going to do it again either, so if you don't like it, don't worry, it's only once. I did read my husband's sermons on a couple of occasions when he couldn't do it, but it's very different writing your own. And I don't know how you do it every week. Also, I'd like to say that I have by no means accomplished what I'm going to talk about. It challenges me day by day, and I hope and pray that it's acceptable to God and that maybe it will give you something to think about and maybe challenge you too. I wonder how many choices you've made already this morning. What time to get up? What to have for breakfast? What to wear? And most importantly, whether or not to come to church today. Good choice. Some years ago, I read a novel by Chaim Potok, a Jewish rabbi and author. It was about the various branches of Judaism, talking of three, and how these three men in the different branches, how it affected their children. A sentence in the book stuck with me for all these years, and it's challenged me over this time. In the story, a boy from Hirsch University, a Jewish place of education, arrives at his religious class having done absolutely no preparation. His reason, or excuse, is because he had a maths test coming up and he had to study for hours and hours doing that. There was no time left to look at the passage he was supposed to study for his religious class. As you can imagine, there was a long interaction between the teacher and the boy. And the gist of what the teacher said was this, and this is the sentence that's been with me. The choices we make show the world what's important to us. The choices we make show the world what is important to us. The choice he was to make was how he spent his time, and that's what we've done today in coming here. Through the choice we made to come to church and how often we come to church, we show our neighbours, family and friends, and in my case, a bus driver I used to have, how important our faith is to us. Incidentally, the bus driver would often comment on how much she enjoyed the bells because as she stops at my stop to let me off, they start ringing. They still do. Do you, like me, sometimes wish there wasn't so much choice in shops? The other week, I stood in front of the eggs, thinking, which ones am I going to buy? There were seven brands. Even these choices of our purchases show what's important to us. In the case of the eggs, concern for chickens that are God's creatures. It might be concern for workers overseas in factories, God's family here on earth, for the environment, God's creation, our support for local businesses and for our country. The choices we make show the world what's important to us. We could choose to trust God. You may know the story of the man that fell down a cliff. He'd managed to grab a ledge halfway down and he's hanging there. He'd been there quite a long while and he's calling out, "Help! Help!" And suddenly a voice replies, "Hello, can I help you?" Oh, the relief. "Thank you. Oh, please help me. I'm stuck halfway down and I can't get down. Who are you?" "I'm God. What can I do for you?" "Oh, look, please, I don't want to hurt myself. Can you help me?" "Yes, of course. Now, you've just got to do what I say. Are you ready?" "Yes. I want you to let go." The man is silent for quite a while. And then he calls out, "Is there anyone else up there?" You may have seen the ad on television where the man's fallen down the cliff and he's hanging on a jacket. They're telling us to just trust a jacket. Every day we put our trust in people we don't know. The mechanic who's fixed our car, the people who've processed our food, the person who drives the bus. It's a huge list when you think about it. Why do we find it hard to trust God, who made the universe, is all-powerful, and who has shown us through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus how much he loves us? When we do trust him, the world sees what's important to us. We can choose to forgive. Maybe you saw the last Sunday program where the mother of the last Lena who was murdered said she had forgiven the man who did it because Jesus had forgiven her. Wow, how powerfully she showed the world what was important to her. We've had something similar in our congregation. Forgiving isn't easy, is it? We often need to ask God for help to achieve it. We can choose how we speak. In our New Testament reading, we heard James speaking about our tongues. They really do sound incredibly hard to control, don't they? Words can lift or put down. They can encourage or shame. They can show hate or love. Let's pray that God helps us to guard our tongues, that the world might see what's important to us. There are many other choices I could have told you about, but I think you're probably getting the idea. The choices we make show the world what's important to us. The good news is we have a helper. So if we manage to get these things right, what difference would it make? And what do we want it to make a difference to? As Christians, we're required to be light in the world, to proclaim God's love and sacrifice. Is it only possible for us to do that if the world sees that there's something different about how we live? I don't know that I've ever brought anybody to Jesus, and that's a sad thing to say at my age. I do hope, though, that I have sown some seeds and that God has been able to grow them. An article that comes to me spoke about the recent Faith and Belief survey. It revealed a significant mismatch between those who espoused Christian beliefs and values like caring and kindness, faithfulness, love and honesty, and how they saw people who professed to be Christians actually living these values out. So how do we grow our discipleship? Laidlaw lecturer Karen Kemp says discipleship comes down to the small things because they're the things that people notice. Discipleship, she said, is not about the grand gesture, but rather a posture of kindness towards others. And she says this requires us to be committed and intentional in our daily lives. That makes me think of Galatians 5:22. And here we find the helper that I spoke of before. I'm not usually good at remembering where to find verses in the Bible, but I do remember this one because of the song. I'm not going to sing it, but it goes, "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness and gentleness and self-control." Galatians 5:22. Galatians 5:22. I can't resist that bit. Now I'm going to go full circle back to the beginning, to the man that's responsible for me standing up here, Chaim Potok. Chaim, I've been calling him all these years. But I recently spent time with Mandy O'Neill, and she kindly let me do this to her. And at the end, she said, no, you don't call him Chaim, you call him Chaim. And I'm sure some of you learned people knew that already. Chaim. And Chaim is a word, Hebrew word, for life. In our Old Testament reading today, we heard how we are to choose life by loving the Lord our God, walking in his ways, and keeping his commandments, decrees, and laws. May God help us to choose life.